Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield. Made by you.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0414 281 4082.
Good evening. Here we are again. It's a deserted island disc. It's a Wednesday night. Very hot and sunny here in Sheffield. But we're doing fine. I've got a guest with me tonight. It's Sharon. Was it Sharon Dreads?
It is.
So Sharon. Oh, I'm so pleased Sharon's come on the show. I've been wanting Sharon to be on the show for such a long time. She's an amazing singer and guitar player that we'll see in lots of pubs and places around the Sheffield area and further afield. She's hot. Back in the country from a international gig in Lindos, haven't you? Just been playing in Lindos.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Even hotter than here.
Very much hotter than here.
So it's great to have you. So, what would you, Deserted Island Disc? It's a show where usually we get people who have deserted the island of Ireland. We started this show about 18 months ago, but I'm now running out of Irish people pretty quick, and I'm now just getting people who are lovely and interesting, and who I like. So Sharon fits that category very well. So Sharon's, you're professional.
Yes, going on for nearly 2 years, I think, now. I gave up the day job full-time, and music's all I do now.
Yeah, well, that's amazing to get to that point, isn't it?
Very much so. Very lucky.
I must have seen you probably 20 years ago, maybe, in the Dog and Partridge, yeah. And you're always kind of show-stopping. People would always go, wow, what a voice, how to do it. But then to get to that point where it becomes, like, you can do it and not do anything else, must be fantastic.
Yes, it's a very big step to take, and I pulled up my big girl pants and did it.
Well done. Well, what we do in the hour is talk about your life and your story, so I'm sure we'll get to that point, mm-hmm. and where it's at. But what we like to do is start at the beginning. So she's here in the studio to paint a picture of holding a beautiful Takamine guitar that will be played at least a couple of times in the show, and we'll do that. But really what we want to do is kind of talk about your beginnings and where you were born and, yeah.
Okay, so I was born and raised in Sheffield. I grew up in Deepcar. My father was a trade union officer, and my mother a barmaid. And some people say I come out of the womb with a placard, being born to a trade union officer.
What kind of trade union was he doing? What kind of?
He worked for the GMB, which was the General Municipal Boilermakers Union, but he was heavily involved in loads of trade unions and picket lines and Labour Party and socialism. And he was a great man who fought for equality and people's rights and justice. That was my upbringing, really.
Yeah, so it's in there, yeah. And that's shone through, I think.
I think so, yeah. People say I've got as big a gob as he had, so.
you're in your 40s, aren't you, Sharon, yes?
Yeah, I'm 47 in July. Yeah, I'm fine, yeah.
It's just giving a picture to the audience of kind of what era you grew up in and what it was like. So Deep Carve, people don't know, it's like on the very edge of Sheffield, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes.
And there's a bit of separation, isn't it, really? It's
like there is.
So you've got like Stocksbridge and places that were kind of part of Sheffield, but actually their own communities, I imagine.
That's it, yes. I used to say that people, once I grew up there and I realised, I actually run my own business there for a while. And that's another story we'll get to. But I used to say that there was a lot of people who lived there that felt like the traffic lights at Deep Car, that the world ended and you needed a passport to go beyond them.
Yeah.
I did, and you know, I'm very glad that I did leave it all behind.
Yes, well done. So what was it like then? Was that kind of village mentality? Did you go to primary school there?
Oh, yes, village mentality, definitely. Wasn't my scene at all. I felt very trapped there. I needed to spread my wings and get out and meet more people and find out more about the world and culture and integrate more with people, more like me.
So you felt different to this?
Yes,
What age do you think you felt kind of different?
I think from a young age, because of the upbringing I had with my parents, I was mostly brought up in a very adult environment. I didn't really socialise with kids very much.
Yeah.
And I used to get involved with my dad and the union things and the socialism. And I was on rallies with him on his shoulders, fighting sorts of causes. You know, he took me to an anti-apartheid rally down in London when I was very young. It was strange. I didn't really mix well with kids my own age. Yeah. I just felt very different to them.
Yeah. And I suppose, Dick, was it very white in terms of the people that lived there? Kind of, was it many non-white people living there? Or?
I actually had a friend at school, in junior school, and she was mixed race, and she knew that she was the only mixed race in the village, and she used to call herself Aif Bik.
Right, right. Yeah, so.
And it was funny at the time, but it wasn't looking back, because she learned at a young age to take the mickey out of herself before other people did, you know. So we got on well.
But I was saying, so your dad would have kind of been fighting against that kind
absolutely.
Of thing. But you'd stick
absolutely.
Out again.
One of my earliest memories in school, the first time I was picked on, was everybody knew that it was my father running around the village in a Ford Cortina with speakers on the roof, shouting "Vote Labour" with Roger Barton. And playing the floral dance very loudly. And they all knew it was my father.
Floral dance.
I still love that tune. It's one of my happy tunes.
Yeah, it's not your first choice, though, is it?
No, I'm afraid not. No.
Well, I think I think you were saying that your dad was very influential in your music as well.
Yes, very much so.
Should we play your first choice, and then we'll talk a bit more about
his
musical influence? So go on, do you want to introduce it and why you
picked it? Yeah, so my father was, as you say, a big musical influence to me, and he brought me up on all sorts of great music that I still love now. But his absolute favourite was Joan Baez, and he nagged and nagged and nagged me to learn Joan Baez. And this was both our favourite Joan Baez songs. It was originally Bob Dylan, but we love the Joan Baez version. So this is Forever Young's Joan Baez.
May God's blessing keep you always. May your wishes all come true. May you always do for others and let others do for you. May you build a ladder to the stars and climb on every rung. May you stay. May you grow up to be true. May you always know the truth and see the light surrounding you. May you always be courageous, stand upright and be strong, and may you stay. Changes shift. may your song always be sung, and may you stay.
Forever Young. Yes, thank you. You were telling me a bit about the lyrics there while it was playing. Yeah.
Yes, my father always used to play that and say to me, always nudge me and say to me, if you live your life by the lyrics of that song, kid, you won't go far wrong. And I think he was right.
Yeah, definitely true, yes. So tell them all about your dad and his influence on your music then.
So my dad was only musical in the fact that he was a solo cornet player in Uterbridge Brass Band.
Right.
But he always told everybody that it was tone deaf. Right. I think it was the way around, I'm not sure how it works, but he always used to say something like that they used to tune the band into him rather than him into the band.
Yeah, well, but it must have been good to be a soloist.
It's, And he had a passion for music, even though he wasn't particularly musical, and he was a terrible singer, but he used to try, usually after a few whiskies. They had some friends in the 70s before I was born, and they run folk clubs,
okay,
and quite well-known and renowned folk club called the Back of the Moon that started, I think, in Deep Car, and moved to the Park Hotel upstairs at the bottom of Wadsley Lane, and they had the likes of Joe Cocker before he hit the big time, Barbara Dixon when she was on the folk scene, Maddie Pryor, and they had a resident compere alternating between Tony Capstick and Mike Harding.
Oh, fantastic. Not bad.
So yeah, they were very into music, but more so my dad. And when that came to an end, he was still very much part of the folk scene of the local area and surrounding area. So I grew up going to lots of folk clubs with him and events and Kayleys. We always went to Whitby Folk Week.
Oh, wow, yeah. Did you do the carol singing? That's what that ended, didn't it?
Yes, he loved to do the carol singing with my godparents and friends, Andy and Eileen. They used to do all the carol singing around the area. I think there's so many. They come to mind all the time, but he loved it. So he was tone deaf and a terrible singer, but he absolutely loved it. Sometimes you have to nudge him and tell him to quieten down, you know. That was like a lot of my childhood was with my mum working behind a bar mostly at night. She wasn't really around much for that, so I spent a lot of time with my dad doing that. And one year he just asked me what I wanted for Christmas, and I said, I want to be like them people at the folk club and the folk festival, I want a guitar. So he got me a guitar for Christmas, and then he found a local musician who wasn't actually a guitar teacher at the time, Dave Frisney from Deep Car.
Okay.
A few people will know him, and spent the first few years guitaring with him, teaching me the basics. And then he used to invite me up to the castle at Bolsterstone where he did a weekly gig, and I'd get up on stage and play some solos behind him.
What age?
Oh, God, I was about 8 or 9, probably.
Wow, that was young, innit, yeah.
And he used to take me, my dad would go with us, and we'd go to the Plumpers, Tinsley, with his band on a Friday night, and I'd get up and do the solo to Wonderful Tonight, Eric Clapton,
that's
There was all sorts going on.
A lot of people kind of start, a lot of people might say, I want to play guitar when they're, whatever, 7, 8 years old.
Yeah.
And then they try it and go, oh, no, it's too hard, that, and put it down and don't do it. But obviously you... Do you think it took to it instantly, and like kind of, or was it just the teacher?
I took to the basics. I could have got, you know I could have persevered and been a better guitarist. I talk about myself being a very basic guitarist, and I like to quote Joan Baez in that, you know, I'm not a technical guitarist. My voice is my instrument. I sort of started to sing around Teddy. Was pushing me to sing. And soon after that, I became a bit of a stroppy teenager and didn't want to read music and do it properly, and started being a bit of a rebel. So,
well, I think you did the right thing. That's a great time, huh? No, but there's certain people in there. I think of, like, you know, Christy Moore, who's he's a great guitarist, but he doesn't try and do too much, doesn't he?
Less is more sometimes.
It's his voice that you want to hear and do it, and you can get someone else to do lead guitar or whatever, isn't it?
Yeah. So
I think that's you, innit? You play it to suit your voice, you think?
That's it, yeah.
I feel like we'll tease the audience some more and not get you playing just yet. Well, we could do your next song, which was Levellers. So I think,
So this one, the Levellers, a lot of people know. I'm a huge fan still to this day. I see them loads. A lot of people say there's a lot of pictures of me knocking around, stood in front of the Levellers. And it's my happy place, and I have a different kind of smile. So I was first introduced to Levellers by good friends of my father's, Mick and Louise Green. And Louise was a fantastic singer-guitarist, and she was often sat in their lounge, twinkling away on the guitar. And one day I heard her, went in and had a listen, and she was trying to master The Boatman by the Levellers.
Right.
And I still love that song. It's one of my favourites. And I asked her who it was by, she told me, and I went and had a listen to him, got an album. And although I love that song, this was the song that really made me love the Levellers.
Yeah, it's a cracker. One Way, Levellers.
There's only one way. Punk grew up, we choked on all our dreams, we wrestled with our fears.
We're running through the heartless concrete streets, chasing our ideas. Run!
Levelers, One Way, yeah. You were going to say a bit more about this song, Sharon?
So, yeah, we touched a little bit about being bullied in junior school, but when I got to high school, it got a lot worse. I didn't fit in at all, and I think I discovered the Levelers when I was about 11, 12, so about a year, second year in,
yeah.
And I started dressing like your average Levelers fan.
Yeah.
And didn't fit in with the kids at all. I got bullied, and they used to tease me as I walked down the corridors singing "Where's Your Caravan?" And I'd been tie-dye and a leather jacket and Doc Martens, you know, and I just stood out.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that song and the Levelers, that song in particular, gave me the confidence to not follow the crowd,
yeah,
and not give in when the teachers were trying to say, well, if you just make an effort to fit in, you know. And it gave me that confidence to really express my individuality and never follow and conform, really.
Yeah, it's a confident song, and it's kind of like sticking two fingers up as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I'd love the Levelers for that. And they've, I mean, how they've kind of stuck to their principles for so long, haven't they?
And the songs are still so relevant now, you know, from years ago.
Yeah.
And they're still just as fantastic. I saw them a few weeks ago in Sheffield.
Yeah. And you still play them, don't you? It's still part of your repertoire of songs.
Oh, yes. Many of them. It's hard to pick a favourite.
Is it still there? I mean, we'll talk about your gigs a lot more later on, but generally, I suppose, you kind of play lots of different venues, don't you? And there's,
yeah.
I suppose, some venues, it's kind of easier to fit in those songs, is it? Do you yeah. have to change your repertoire to
where you play? Yes, quite a lot.
Yeah.
We, myself and now band as well, we play many sort of different styles of music in gigs. So one night it might be one genre where we can slip a bit of other things in and mix it up a bit. Sometimes it's quite strict. And then, like this week, I've been playing a rock festival in Lindos. So I just love music, I love different genres of music. So, yeah, I've got a very wide, varied taste to play, sing, and listen to.
Yeah, and a huge repertoire, I presume, over the years.
Quite large, yes.
So we're coming on, I suppose, talking about you, and you'd carry on playing music. You said you was playing like from a young age in the folk clubs, and then what happened with your kind of next musical steps?
Yeah, so the next move was, there was some turbulent times when I was around 11, some bad things happened. We'll not go too much into that, okay. But I was struggling, and I think I was probably going down a path of rebellion, and it could have gone the wrong way. And my dad was still encouraging me with music. I was doing bits, you know. And then he saw a sign outside the local pub just two doors away, the Pennook in Deepcar. And he saw a sign saying Irish Duo on Saturday night. So he went in and checked it out and asked permission. He saw that this duo got guests up. He absolutely loved them. And he asked permission from the landlord and landlady, could he bring his daughter in that was underage? She sings and plays guitar. So I was given permission. He took me in the following week. And it was Steve McNamara from Limerick,
yeah,
and Mick Machin, who you know from The Grapes.
Yeah.
And they were a duo called Junior and the Spook.
Right.
And they were fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, they. I think Mick sat down and I got up to sing, and Steve asked me what I'd like to sing, and I said to him, "Do you know Summertime, Ella Fitzgerald in A minor?" And he said, "I do." And the rest is history, really. They became good friends with my dad. They were playing all over, sessions, gigs all over Sheffield. And we got to know them, and over the next couple of years, started spending a lot of time at the gigs and sessions and going
still
all
really
over
young.
The place.
So you're still like 12? Yeah, 12.
Yeah, 13, but a little bit older, about 13, 14 yeah. by then, I think. And Mick always says I've still got the voice that I had then.
Okay.
And it was the start of a beautiful friendship, really. And I think what I needed was that grounding of I got the basics. I needed to know how to perform. And they were the best teachers of that. I look back now and think they were the grounding to what I'm doing now and why I'm doing it and how I do it.
Yeah, great. I mean, a lot of the reasons why I probably ended up doing this show was probably kind of those guys. When I first moved to Sheffield 2001 and found myself in the in the Dog and Partridge, and they'd do pretty much every Friday and Saturday night, wasn't it?
They were
Mick and Steve there, and it was just amazing just to see that talent just in a pub.
Incredible.
So there, and then so I thought, I like this place, and then I think I've didn't stop going in.
That's it.
It's
addictive, isn't it?
But no, they're absolutely fantastic. They're there. But I suppose it's kind of what they do as well is they kind of had the audience in the palm of their hand. They know how to interact.
And absolutely.
Is that what you've learned from them as well?
Yes. Repertoire, how to build it, how to keep a crowd motivated and on the edge of the seat, wanting more and that sort of thing. And, you know, I watched them for many, many years, and it was some of the best times of my life. The people, the nights that we had, you know, the music, the sessions, people that I met then, still, you know, really good friends with now, lifelong friends made from it. And there was just such an influence, and they introduced me. I mean, my dad used to play a lot of Irish music and loved it. The Furies was always on a Sunday when Nan came round, you know. But it was Irish music I'd never heard before,
and
absolutely fantastic.
Well.
Yeah. Plus a mixture of pop and party tunes, and that's how
fun.
I piece it, my sets together now, built on what they did.
So Mick Machin still plays every Friday and Saturday night in the Grape. So he's always I'd recommend anyone to pop in there. Yeah,
absolutely.
Usually starts about 8:30, doesn't he?
About nine, half past on a Friday and Saturday.
So he's still down there. And Sharon often joins him when you haven't got your own gigs, haven't you? You'll pop in. And then Steve was over on St. Pat's Day, wasn't he? So I think that's a regular thing. He'll be back, won't he?
It is, yes. That originated from the big white tent on the Fargate with Mark Simonite. Mark's got his own bar now, but he still brings Steve over Ocky O'Connell, his fiddle player. Yeah. And there was Yvonne, his wife, sadly passed away now.
Yeah. So I had the pleasure of seeing Steve again sing last St. Pat's Day in the Perch, and recommend that for next year as well.
I'm sure it'll be over.
But now it's the time we've all been waiting for. It's very hot in the studio, so hopefully your guitar's... do you want to just give it a try? It's not going out of tune. Yeah?
It's close enough for
folks. Close enough, it sounds beautiful. So do you want to introduce your song and away we go?
Okay, so I think the early days of meeting Mick and Steve, I discovered... the Cranberries, they hit the UK quite hard, and this song was a massive hit. And I think quite early on, Steve was quite impressed with my version, I believe, and the passion that I sang it with. And I think that was the upbringing that I had and understanding the song, where it was coming from. And I think some people get fed up of singing songs over and over and over. And I think this one is a song that has just been, you know, it's so poignant now, and it's a reoccurring theme that we don't learn from, and it's sad, but a beautiful song at the same time. And I do what I do now, and I think a lot of people still always want to hear my version of this song, but this song in particular. And it's kind of my bread and butter now. And I know a few people have asked for my version on your show.
Definitely, so. I love it. I mean, I'm one of the people that whenever I see Sharon, I go, play zombie. I'm sure she's, but you're not quite fed up with it yet.
Not quite, no. So yeah, this is the Cranberries Zombie.
Absolutely gorgeous, yeah, lovely. Ah, I was just thinking about Mike's comments about you singing like that when you were 14.
Yeah. I'd say it's matured. I've got some old recordings that Mick did, and I played them to some friends recently, actually, on the way to Beautiful Days Festival last year.
Yeah.
And I said, have a guess who that is. And I listen now, and I hate hearing myself. I used to really hate hearing myself sing, but I can cope with it now. I really hate hearing myself talk. That's the worst thing.
Oh.
But I can tell it's there, but it's definitely matured.
No, I mean, I think even like I can tell really from like hearing you probably 20 years ago, first year. I mean, you've got that beautiful karma edge to it as well when you need to. You know, like, obviously you belt it out, but then there's a bit to this where it's kind of beautiful.
It was actually Steve's sister, Jean McNamara, last year on St. Patrick's Day said to me, "Sharon, you like a fine wine. You get better with age."
Yeah, no, it's beautiful. Yeah, that's definitely true. But I suppose it's also, I mean, would you say that you... Obviously, you're gigging more than you ever have, I suppose, aren't you?
Yes.
But also, I mean, if you weren't gigging back in the day, would you still be singing and practicing? Or you're definitely singing more now, and that's...
Definitely singing more now. I did a lot back then. When Steve decided to return to Ireland, there was some of it, their gig opportunities available, and I did go and do the Hogshead once a week and a couple other bits and pieces. But at the same time, I was trying to pay rent and pay bills and survive.
Yeah.
And it was just so hard to live off it then, you know, so I had to go and get a normal job. And
so you'd left, obviously, Deepcar?
Yes, I'd moved there by then.
Into the centre of Sheffield?
I had a little flat in Hillsborough.
In Hillsborough, so still towards Deepcar.
Yeah. A bit more commutable.
I
mostly worked in my early years in health and social care.
Okay.
I did health sciences at college and...
Did you go to uni or college, was it?
Just college, Sheffield College. And I did health sciences. I intended going on to study nursing, but life got in the way. And then, bizarrely, by twist of fate again, my life regarding work really has been a series of random opportunities and one to sometimes probably wrongly make quite quick decisions about things.
Okay.
When opportunities land in my lap, you know, and it's not done me too badly.
You know, sometimes the best way, isn't it?
That's it, yeah. So I've had some stints running bars and pubs, and I've done some security work, random gigging in between and all over the place.
That sounded interesting, that pub you said you ran.
Is that
later on? I was going to talk about that now.
I had quite a few, but I think one of them that I mentioned earlier was the Meadow Street Hotel. You're on about Keith Short.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people, Keith and quite a few people, still reminisce about that being great memories for them. It was a back street pub in Upperthorpe, the Meadow Street Hotel, and it had been run down and closed for a while. I got my hands on it and turned it into a real ale pub near the Kelham Real Ale Trial, and had music sessions as often as I could. Patrick Walker used to come down and do sessions. We acquired a piano. And it took me back to the old Harlequin days, the original Harlequin, with just music coming out of every room. And, you know, it was fantastic.
So would you have found that scene without that kind of chance encounter with Mick and Steve? Or do you think?
Probably not. I don't know.
Your dad was folk, but it's different. Yeah. You jump from folk to...
I met them at a time where I was going off the rails and things could have been very different, like I said earlier. And I think it was just that meeting and being able to explore. They introduced me to so many places that I probably never would have found, you know, like the original Harlequin with Linda. Yeah. That was just heaven. A secret knock on a door late night, and a big black door opens, and there's just music and smoke coming from every room, and it's just fantastic.
And
I spent a lot of time there.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, your next song choice was kind of, you said, relates a bit to Pat Walker.
Yes, a little bit, and it's actually one I've chosen. I think I loved it from the first time I heard it, and I believe the first time I heard this song was Pat Walker in Fagan's many years ago singing it. And then I again fell in love with this artist, John Martin. And this one really is a sort of dedication to all the wonderful people I have in my life supporting me and the friendships and how I see them as family. I'm just thankful for them, really, and this is for them.
Beautiful. It's a great song as well. May You Never, John Martin.
Thank you. like a moonbeam song, brother of mine. You know that I love you true. And you never talk dirty behind my back, and I know that there's those that do. Oh, please, won't you be rid of mine? Love is a lesson to learn in our time. Oh, please, won't you be rid of mine for me? May you never lay your head down without a hand to hold. May you to me, you know that I love you true. You hold no blade to stab me in the back, and I know that some do.
He was one of those people that can kind of do both, wasn't he? He could play guitar really well and sing, can he?
Yes, absolutely stunning guitarist. Yeah. And weirdly, the only genre of music I say I don't like is jazz. And then I play with John Martin in my car sometimes, and then my partner Stephen will get in and say, "What's this jazz rubbish you listen to?"
Yeah, there you go, yeah.
And yeah, I never really think about it, but he is a sort of folk jazz. Yeah, he's a crossover artist. Yeah.
A lot of people like him, they're jazz fans as well. But yeah, we're on Deserted Island Disc. I've not said that for ages. I'm getting so carried away with my guests tonight. It's fantastic. So, Deserted Island Disc, it's the show where we tried to get people born on the island of Ireland. Now living in South Yorkshire, but we've run out of them, so we're just having people who are lovely and people who love Sheffield is the thing. So next week I'm going to have my partner on the show, Tracy. So we're going from Sharon to Tracy next week. Is who's wishes she was Irish, but and goes to Ireland quite a lot. So we'll have a wonderful show next week as well. But this is going well. We've only got about 15 minutes left, so we better crack on with your life. And we're talking about, I suppose, what's interesting is, well, you kind of, suppose, relatively late in life made that move, a break, to kind of be a full-time musician. And you're saying after years of doing jobs and singing, and what got you there to that point?
So I think I just carried on a normal life of working, really, and living and working to survive. And music was sort of a backseat that I did occasional gigs here and there, but I didn't think of it as a source of income. And then lockdown happened.
Yeah.
And the fact that we weren't allowed to go out and do those things, like anything, we weren't allowed to go anywhere, do anything. I think music was the thing I missed, because even if I wasn't performing music, I was somewhere listening to music and watching bands. And that really got to me. And when we came out the other side, I kind of had this sense of, I felt like I really missed it, but I also felt like I'd wasted something. And I wanted to get back into it and do it. And I just literally sort of, you know, I remember the early days of restricted lockdown where Mick was so excited to get back in the grapes, and we ended up, we were allowed to sit in, they got in a tent outside in the backyard and we were allowed to sit in there. And I've got videos on my phone and pictures of us all sat there with scarves and gloves on in the dead of winter freezing, playing in the backyard, you know. And then, we were just so eager to get back to it. And I think it just gave me a new drive to not waste what I'd got. And I said to myself, right, I'm gonna make a pact with myself. I'm gonna, you know, go and get some gigs and do it a bit more regularly, you know. And I got back around some open mics and got picked up a few gigs here and there, and I was down grapes with Mick a lot, and just suddenly out of nowhere, I think it just sort of snowballed, and I found myself with lots of gig opportunities. And then I couldn't fit it in with work at the time. So I went bank at work so I could pick my shifts and gig more. And it just snowballed. I was just really lucky. As I say, about 2 years ago, I just thought, you know what? I've got enough work here. I can do this, you know.
I suppose there was also like kind of a bit of a, not quite an explosion, but there was an expansion of particularly Irish live venues, wasn't there? Which is great for the city. Great stuff.
It's like a second time around. So when Mick and Steve as Junior and the Spook were around in the sort of early to mid-90s, there was a big Irish theme pub thing going on, and they used to annihilate that. They were absolutely all over it, and I saw them, all of the pubs were fantastic. And it's like I've got the second coming, along with some other fantastic musicians of Sheffield, to share those stages, you know. And I do have to mention, obviously, I spent a lot of time in the grapes, and myself and my band now have a residency once a month in the Dog and Partridge on Triplet Lane. And I run a session there, Connor and Sarah, and I run a session there 3 Thursdays a month. But
I
think,
is that the Irish session?
Yes,
well, I'll keep trying to link it back to our show, but you do it's an Irish session.
Yes, so the first Thursday of the month is random sort of anything goes jam. Then the third Thursday of the month is Celtic session. So anything Celtic. And then the last session of the month is I share with Ian Staves, known as Dog. That's an Americana session, which is tomorrow night in the Dog and Partridge. Always a great session.
Is he the fiddle player?
No, he's a singer guitarist. Ian Dog Staves.
Great
singer guitarist. It's a really good night. Come along if you're into Americana music, but anything goes. We're not strict, you know. We call it Americanish.
Well, again, while you're at it, then, just in case you don't have time, other places you play, let's get them all in.
So I've got to put a massive shout out and a huge thank you to obviously the Dog and Partridge, the Grapes, but Four Leaf Irish Bar on West Street Lane, on the end of West Street, just behind the City Hall. If you've not been, please go and check it out. It's a fantastic bar, really, really friendly. It has all age groups in there. I was terrified of going on that stage. I thought, I don't know enough songs for the younger people that go in there, or the Irish songs that I know, not the sort of Irish songs that they know, you know. It terrified me. Went in there, absolutely smashed it, loved it, and I feel right at home there. They've been absolutely wonderful to us.
I think you were saying it was like one of your favourite gigs recently, wasn't it? You played, and it was saying it was just
It gets very, very busy, very, very hot. It's Dive's fantastic. The whole team in there are absolutely lovely. We play there once a week. We're resident. We alternate between Fridays and Saturdays. It's my solo slot at 2:05 this Saturday. And then the Saturday after, myself and the full band with Jamie and Craig will be there, 5:00. We're doing a double, actually, 5:00, 11 p.m.
Brilliant. Loads of places to see, Sharon.
Yeah.
Let's get another song from you in, because we've quickly run out of time, so let's get another live song, please, Sharon.
Okay, so speaking of Irish songs, this is a more modern one, actually, that it's just become a staple now of my set, because I absolutely love it. I fell in love with it. It's by Aslan from Dublin. Sad story. Christy Dignam obviously passed away a couple of years ago, singer-songwriter. What can I say? It does what it says on the tin. I want to dedicate this one tonight to a lovely musician and soul I met along the way and his family, John O'Malley, who sadly passed away 2 weeks ago from cancer, and his lovely family who were going through hell right now. I know exactly what they're going through. So this is for John and the O'Malleys and the family. It's called Crazy World.
How can I protect you in this crazy world? It's all right, yeah. It's all right. I have fallen down so many times. Don't know why.
What a treat for me. Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you, Sharon. That's my guest, Sharon Dreads, live in the studio this evening on Deserted Island Disc. We are very, very quickly running out of time. You've picked one more song, which we'll try and get in. But I just think, just let's kind of finish off with kind of where you're up to now. I mean, you're not on Spotify and things, are you?
We're not on Spotify yet. All our gigs are listed, whether it's solo or with the guys, on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Sharon Dreads Music. So when I say the guys, I've known Jamie Burney, Sheffield Fiddler, for a long, long time. And we lost contact, and he joined Ferocious Dog, the Celtic punk band.
They're great, aren't they?
We bumped into each other at a festival a couple of years ago, and it was great to see him. And we said, let's get back playing music. It took a while, but we got there. And then along the road, we met Craig, a fantastic pro drummer, Curtin Cajon. So we're doing duos, solos, trios. We need to come up with a name properly because it confuses people. We will hit on it one day. And things are going really well. We're booked up solid for this year. We've got stuff in the pipeline for next year, a couple of festivals even with new contacts I made in Greece. And things are just going great. And my long-suffering other half, roadie sound engineer, Stephen, has been squirreling away, learning the bass ukulele in the shed. And he's very good. So we're looking for bigger stages. He's going to be joining the band eventually. We just need a bigger stage to fit us all on. And then we also have somebody else in the pipeline that may be coming along to join us as well. So things are moving and things are going really well, and just looking forward to what the future holds now.
Well, as it should be. You so much deserve it, Sharon.
Thanks, Ben.
Let's play your final song, and we'll say good night to the evening, and thanks for listening, everyone. So just introduce your final song and why you picked it.
So quickly, I've always loved Joni Mitchell. From a very young age, my dad played her, and this was one I loved, and then it just becomes more meaningful as you get older and reflect on life and lessons learned from people and things and what life throws at you, really. So this is Both Sides Now.
Thanks, Sharon. What a lovely night. Thank you.
Rows and flows of angel hair, and ice cream castles in the air, and feather canyons everywhere. Looked at clouds that way, but now they only block the sun. They rain and they snow on everyone. So many things I would have done, but clouds got in my way. I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's cloud illusions I recall. I really don't know clouds. Moons and Junes and Ferris wheels, the dizzy dancing way that you feel, as every fairy tale comes through. I've looked at love that way, but now it's just another show. And you leave them laughing when you go. And if you can, don't let them know. Don't give yourself away. still somehow it's love's illusions.